Well, good morning, everyone, on a Wednesday. Michael has the morning off. Noam Layden is here. A lot to discuss. We'll be joined by Dr. Gregory Polin from the Mayo Clinic in just a few moments. Our big three stories. The president claims he upplayed the virus. He didn't downplay it. That was at a town hall in Philadelphia last night on ABC. I thought he said on tape to Woodward that he downplayed it. He said, nope, he upplayed it. Earlier in the day, Israel, the UAE, and Bahrain all signed diplomatic agreements at the White House. Also in the big three. Well, as Joe's been talking about in the newscast, a fire in a house in Astoria, and troubling because bomb-making materials are found inside that house. Lots of questions. We don't have the answers yet. And rounding out the big three, the city council will vote on a 10% restaurant surcharge today to help out the restaurant industry here in New York City. The governor says he is not canceling trick-or-treating. It's up to the parents. So there you go. Not everything getting shut down. And just so you know, if you want to keep track on your calendar, it's exactly 100 days until Christmas. How about that?
All right. Something to look forward to, at least.
Now, if you're a numerology fan, it's exactly 200 days until Easter. Now, who knew that they were Christmas and Easter 100 days apart? There you go. 45 days. Should I keep going? 45 days till trick-or-treat. 48 days till Election Day. I mean, that's the real big number. So just 48 days to go. So every a week at this time, we're joined by Dr. Gregory Polin from the Mayo Clinic. And he is their vaccine research group guru. And Dr. Polin actually sent us gifts. Now, I have to tell you, Doc, you know, we like having you on. You didn't have to send us stuff. But apparently, so what is this? He sent us mugs, Natalie. What does the mug say on it?
Well, it's a beautiful mug that says vaccine research group. And then the back says flu vaccine and hand hygiene. Protect yourself, patients, and family. I think there's some people we know about the flu vaccine.
Yeah, did you send one to Joe Bartlett?
I have been converted because I have not gotten a flu vaccine in many years, and my kids didn't either, and we are all going.
Even my daughter. Well, Doc, I already got mine. I got mine already. Joe Bartlett, our newsman, says I'm not getting a flu shot. You want to address Joe directly here, Dr. Polin?
Sure. Happy to talk to anybody.
All right, tell Joe why he should get a flu shot.
The reason to get a flu shot is because of the high risk, not only of getting influenza, but as we get older, of developing complications, pneumonia, being hospitalized, or, say, dying. On average, each year, we have somewhere around 15,000 to 60,000 Americans who die as a result of influenza. The other thing is for adults who get influenza, they about double their risk of a heart attack or stroke as a complication of flu.
Joe?
Okay. Now, this may not carry weight with you. Doesn't carry weight with my own doctor. But, you know, I just have not gotten the flu. I mean, I don't think I've ever had it. So I consider myself healthy. That's why I don't get the shot.
Yeah. No, and I understand that. I very frequently get patients who say that. I'll go back into their medical records, and I'll find several instances where they may not have been tested, but almost certainly had flu. They just don't remember it. So that's one possibility. The second possibility is it's a bit like saying, you know, and I can honestly tell you, I've never had a car accident, but I'm still going to wear my seatbelt. I'm still going to make sure my airbags deploy, because as we get older and we get influenza, and the odds are that, of course, you will. The odds any given year about 20% or greater that you'll get flu. But as you get older and you get flu, the risks go up significantly.
Well, I just got a lot older because I had my birthday yesterday. So, and these guys,
happy birthday!
Yeah, and these guys have been on my case, so I probably will get it. Even though I think I could get away without it, but I probably will get it this year.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing to show, and 30 years ago, I published a study showing that we immunized a group of people with flu shot and a group with just a saltwater placebo. They didn't know which one they were getting. And the side effect profile, no different between them. Well, so, it's worth doing.
You know, I may be the only one here who's hoping that Joe does not get a flu shot this season.
Oh,
Zingo.
You know, I wanted to ask you about the flu shot just out of curiosity. I had heard this rumor that if you get the flu shot too early in the season, it doesn't last the whole season. Is there any truth to that?
You know, that has been sort of a lingering question. And I think what I would say about the data to date is this. If you're younger, otherwise healthy, I don't think it matters at all. If you're older, you know, somebody in their 70s, 80s, and perhaps other medical problems are more frail, that is a kind of person where the antibody response isn't as high to begin with, my recommendation would be to not get the vaccine until about mid-September. But the CDC recommends, and I would endorse, that influenza immunization programs be completed by the end, no later than the end of October.
So we're on with Dr. Gregory Poland from the Mayo Clinic. I got an email from a listener named Steve, and now I can't verify this is true, but he said that Tucker Carlson had a Chinese virologist on his show, and this gentleman claimed that they're trying to track down the virus, and it did not come from a food market, but it was created by the Chinese in a lab located in Wuhan. We've heard this before. Do you have any knowledge of this?
I don't. And, you know, there just doesn't seem to be anything in the way of genetic or viral traces of the virus's genetic makeup that would suggest that this was created. So, you know, I mean, I guess anybody can claim anything, and how do you disprove it? But I just don't see any evidence for it at this point.
You know, the teachers are really pushing back here in the city, or not all of them, but a lot of them, not to be back in school for in-person learning, which is set to begin on Monday. The virus rate here in the city may be a little bit above 1%. Wondering what you think. Should the teachers be back? Should kids be back in class starting on Monday?
Yeah, you know, for the teachers, of course, it's probably an individual decision in regard to their own health, you know, if they're immunocompromised, elderly, whatever. But I would say as a generality, when you've got rates 1%, something like that, school can safely be carried out with the proviso, and other countries have done it, that there is strict adherence to the proper wearing of a proper mask, physical distancing, and hand washing. By the way, an interesting example of this being done back in the early 1900s when TB was quite an issue is New York, Boston, and Chicago began outdoor schooling. Even through the winter, they did this and showed not only that, but wearing masks dramatically decreased risk.
Doc, before we leave you today, I'm just curious what your latest timeline is on the vaccine. I keep hearing all kinds of different mixed messaging. What are you thinking there at the Mayo Clinic?
Yeah, I think that for widespread immunization of the general public, okay, so for your listeners, that they're probably not going to be receiving a vaccine until mid-ish 2021, and we won't finish immunizing until sometime in 2022. And that's because it's very likely going to take two doses a month apart. So you're talking about not only developing, but deploying billions of doses of vaccine, some of which require ultra cold storage. So while scientifically possible to have a vaccine study completed by the end of the year, the actual administration and distribution of the vaccine is a very complex process. And so I'm going to say more into mid-2021 before we really get a large number of people started on immunization.
All right, Doc. Dr. Gregory Poland, Mayo Clinic, always appreciate your insight. And thanks for the mugs. Talk to you next week, Doc.
Be safe.
All right, you too. When we get back, it's time to teach Natalie a Yiddish word. And at 8:35, Long Island Congressman Peter King joins us. The biggest names in music are on the road to our iHeartRadio Music Festival, back for its 10th year. the 2020 iHeartRadio Music Festival live this Friday and Saturday. The show kicks off at 9 o'clock. Experience it anywhere live on iHeartRadio or watch live on the CW app. Alicia Keys, Bon Jovi, Coldplay, Keith Urban, the list goes on and on and on. And it's brought to you locally by Splat Rebellious Hair Color.
Kane Brown with special guest Khalid and Sway Lee, Keith Urban, Migos, Miley Cyrus, Thomas Rhett, Usher, and surprises only iHeartRadio can bring you. Friday and Saturday starting at 9. Listen on iHeartRadio and watch on the CW app.
Well, this is either going to be great or just one of the worst things we've ever tried, but it's the name of this segment is Let's Teach a Yiddish Word to Natalie. Now, I'll tell you how this came about, because yesterday the word makatunim was discussed, and that's a Yiddish word, which basically means your in-laws. Okay, it's your kids' spouse's parents would be your makatunim. Anyway, so Natalie found that very interesting, and I said, what if we... And so I asked her if she wanted to teach me any Greek Orthodox words, and she says, hey, dope. Greek Orthodox is a religion, but a listener sent me some Greek words, which I cannot repeat on the radio, and I forwarded them to Natalie. Were those accurate words?
Well, I knew one of them for sure. I used to hear that one around. I don't know why, but the F-U word I had never heard in my house, so I'm glad that my parents were not swearing words.
Well, apparently in Greek, the F-U becomes a G-bomb.
Yeah, G-bomb.
But the S word is an S word in Greek too.
Yes.
So but that, you knew that one, huh?
I did.
All right, so let's play Teaching Natalie a Yiddish Word.
Hey, I'm ready.
How's this going so far?
Great. It's good music. Okay. I like that. Very peppy.
The word is Shlemiel and Shlemazel. Do you know the meaning of Shlemiel and Shlemazel?
Wow.
Didn't they do that in Laverne and Shirley?
In Laverne and Shirley. They did that little dance down the sidewalk to that.
All right. But there's a difference between Shlemiel and Shlemazel.
See, now I always thought it would... I don't know.
What'd you think? Okay, you don't know now.
No,
okay.
I really... Well, I never thought about that. I just thought those were fun words that they sang.
No, those are Yiddish words. And I'll tell you, I found an article called Oi to the World. A guide to a Yiddish American. And according to this article, Shlemiel is an incompetent person. For example, the Shlemiel accidentally drops a bowl of soup. Now, Shlemazel is also unlucky, but the example is the Shlemazel is the one the soup falls on.
Right? Oh, so I can call you the Shlemiel and Michael the Shlemazel?
You can't even pronounce it.
Shlemazel.
Shlemiel, Shlemazel.
Which one would you be?
I'd be the Maven, but that's a whole other story.
Called you incompetent there, Len.
I know. Well, that's fine.
You'd be the Shlemiel, I think, and then Mike would be the Shlemazel.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. The soup would fall on him. There's no question.
After we did this yesterday, I looked up some Yiddish words. And there are many words that I've used.
Right.
I never realized they were Yiddish.
But they were Yiddish.
Like
I know,
nosh.
They really worked.
Nosh,
right.
I'd always say nosh when I was going, oh, I'm going to nosh on this. Or kvetch.
Kvetch, absolutely, to complain. You've heard of mensch. A person's a mensch.
Definitely.
Good person. Have you heard of mishugana?
Yes.
Crazy person. You've heard of mishigas, maybe?
No.
That's craziness. That? Well, I'll save that for tomorrow.
Okay.
But you mentioned schmaltz.
Or even like oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey. I never realized that was... I don't know. These are just terms that I've always used. I think New Yorkers use a lot of Yiddish words and they don't realize it.
I think you're right. Anyway, I think this was okay. Should we try it again tomorrow?
Oh, for another one. Yes.
We'll try again tomorrow. Teaching Natalie a Yiddish word. I like this. This is good. Just quickly, Saturday Night Live coming back. We mentioned the other day, October 13th, they're coming back to 30 Rock, and they announced the entire cast is coming back. So that's probably a first in their long and glorious history that everybody is coming back. And you had a note about Tommy Hilfiger?
Yeah, he's selling, you know, suburbia is hot in terms of the real estate market, so he's selling his Greenwich, Connecticut home for $47 million. He bought it for $31 million back in 2010. It's a pretty nice layout, 13,000 square feet, a French fireplace from the 18th century, a pool, everything you'd want in a home. But now, because suburbia is hot, $47 million for that house.
Did he get it, or he just listed it?
Just listed it, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll see what he gets. I told you, I stayed at his house on vacation on the Isle of Mystique.
How was that?
Which was quite a pad. Next door neighbor was Mick Jagger. That's a whole other story. Time for the news. It's a true story. 8:30, good morning, Joe.
All right, let's take you to a house in Astoria, Queens. Something suspicious going on there. There was a fire at this two-story building on 19th Street in Astoria, led to a startling discovery.
There was materials found that raised some concern. That included a number of chemicals, a number of packages, a number of books and manuals.
That is Deputy Police Commissioner John Miller says the materials were not assembled. They did take a suspect into custody. They said he was emotionally disturbed. He's been identified now. Maroc Squires. I don't know if that means anything. Maroc Squires is the individual who was taken into custody. He's been charged so far with reckless endangerment. Back to school in New York City today. Kind of. Remote learning begins for the city's 1 million students ahead of in-person learning on Monday. But the big question remains on Monday, will there be enough teachers to go around? Mayor de Blasio says he's hired an extra 2,000 teachers, and they'll get more if they need them. The principals say they don't think that's enough. Teachers continue to protest. They are not sure they have enough testing. They don't think they have enough teachers. They're just not happy about it all. Mayor de Blasio says time for business to start planning for workers to come back. He says schools and large businesses need to follow metrics and data when it comes to reopening. He says, while small business has to follow city guidelines, the big businesses have a little more flexibility. Indoor dining begins in the city in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, you can go inside in New York, and guess what? You have to pay more for that little privilege. The city council voting today to add a 10% surcharge onto the bills. Great. Councilman Joe Borelli says customers have to pay for the recovery.
That's not a bad idea to help out the restaurant people. 10% is...
Well, is it going to go to the restaurants or is it going to go to the city?
No, I think it goes to the restaurant owners. I don't think it goes to the city. I don't think it's a tax.
You know, the one thing you could do, just tip well.
Yeah, right.
I agree with that. Yeah, totally agree with that.
The other day, yesterday, when I took some takeout, and I just felt, you know, I gave them a big tip as if I was eating there. It's just, you know what?
Absolutely.
You got to do that.
Good God.
My President Trump says he didn't downplay the severity of coronavirus. Instead, during an ABC town hall event, he said he upplayed it. He says he took action because it was a serious problem.
Well, I didn't downplay it. I actually, in many ways, I upplayed it in terms of action. My action was very strong.
Yeah,
because what I did was with China, I put a ban on. With Europe, I put a ban on.
He upplayed it despite telling Bob Woodward in the book that he downplayed the severity.
Probably doesn't matter what he says. Probably doesn't matter what he says anymore, Joe. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Trump. It's Trump.
Just words.
Hey, speaking of
just
people
salad.
You pay attention to, Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's your guy, right?
Yeah, I think he's good.
All right. He's got some vitamin advice here. And I think you need to take his advice here. He says if you are deficient in vitamin D, it does have an impact on your susceptibility to infection. So the researchers have found a link between vitamin D deficiency and the likelihood of being infected with COVID-19. So you better get outside there, Len. Get out of that little box of yours. Get some sunshine.
No. I take vitamin D. I've taken it for a few years now. So Fauci and I are on the same page.
Yeah, it's important to the function of the immune system. And a lower risk of viral respiratory tract infection. By the way, you can also eat fatty fish and mushrooms to increase your vitamin D's. Did you know that?
All right. Thanks, Dr. Joe. Thanks, pal.
Yeah.
Coming up next, Congressman Peter King joins us. What's going on with federal aid for 9/11 first responders? He's got the answers coming up. We always enjoy spending a few minutes with Long Island Congressman Peter King. He's winding up his final several months in Congress as he rides into the sunset. And Congressman, I know we heard from you on 9/11. It was very troubling when we read the story that there's a problem with the funds coming to the FDNY first responders. And has that all been cleared up now? Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Glenn. It's hopefully close to being cleared up. This actually began, I guess, in the last summer of the Obama administration. It continued through the Trump administration. I'm convinced that nobody at a high level knew this was even happening. Apparently, there's a dispute between the federal government and New York City over Medicare payments, which has nothing to do with the fire department. Under the law, the federal government, the Treasury Department, has the right to take away aid from the city when there's a dispute like this going on. And they decided to take it without really advising anyone, taking it from the fire department 9/11 help fund. This was absolutely indefensible, disgraceful. And the fire department was never told about it. The unions was never told about it. They just saw less money coming in. At the beginning, I thought it was just an accounting issue and it would be made up. And the problem here, too, was they came to me. First, I became aware of it was last spring when some of the people at the union came to me and they asked me if I could find out. Apparently, the city didn't explain to them what was going on. The federal government didn't. And then that's when I found out. I finally got a response about 2 months ago saying what I just told you, that the money was being held back because of a dispute over Medicare. To me, that was indefensible. I was going back at them on it. And then when I realized that Vice President Pence was coming in on 9/11, I thought that would be the ideal opportunity. So I discussed it with Mike Pence. He immediately said, we have to take care of this. And then his chief of staff took me aside and he told me to send all the information to their office immediately. I called my office in Washington and they had already been told by the vice president's office to expect, you know, this material coming in. It's totally indefensible. And even in trying to explain it to you, it still makes no sense to me why you would take money from a 9/11 fire department help fund because of a Medicare dispute, which has nothing to do at all with the fire department. This is like the ultimate bureaucracy out of control.
So is it going to work itself out? How is it going to end?
It's going to be up to the Treasury Department. They have to do it. They have to, you know, take the money from somewhere else. Again, I'm not even saying who's right or wrong as far as the whole Medicare dispute. If the city is wrong, there's other places they can take the money. The federal government can take the money back rather than from the fire department, 9/11 healthcare. I mean, this is absolutely disgraceful. So they've assured us it's going to work out. But again, it's like saying the check is in the mail. We have to make sure it's done. We have to stay on them. We're working to get the entire New York delegation now to lean on the Treasury Department and the administration. Again, this began under Obama. It continued under the Trump administration. But again, in fairness to both presidents, I don't think they had any idea what was going on. And I'm willing to bet that neither of their Treasury secretaries knew about it either. It seemed to be one of those middle-level, almost like a Department of Motor Vehicle decision.
We're on with Congressman Peter King from Long Island. Congressman, speaking of the check being in the mail, there's a discussions about a new round of COVID relief funding, and Nancy Pelosi was quoted as saying she'll keep Congress in session until they come up with a bill. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, you know, we have to get something done, and I mean, I'm in strong disagreement with people in the Republican Party who somehow say this is a blue state, red state issue. The fact is, New York City, Nassau County, Suffolk County have been devastated by the COVID virus. They had nothing to do with it. They had no responsibility for it. This was something that came on the country. As a result of that, expenses have gone through the roof. Revenues, I used to be county controller in Nassau County, 40% of the revenues come in through sales tax. Well, sales tax has been devastated with the shutdown we had for all those months. So to me, this is like a tornado. It's like a hurricane. This is a disaster over which the local governments and state government have no control, and there should be compensation for that. And somehow they're saying this is a payoff to New York. This is a payoff because of pension plans. I'm saying no. This make this dollar for dollar. Let the state and city show what they lost in revenues because of this. Let them show the expenses they had to make as far as overtime for police and fire and doctors and the health department, all of those costs that were imposed on us back in, again, especially March, April, May, June, you know, to this day, we're still losing revenue, and make it dollar for dollar. I'm not looking for anything for pension funds or any other program that they think is extravagant. I'm saying make it dollar for dollar, directly related. For whatever reason, Mitch McConnell is locked in. He somehow tries to say this is a giveaway to New York, saying that there's money we haven't spent yet, which is all nonsense. So hopefully we can get it resolved. Again, I was the only Republican that voted for the bill called the HEROES Act that went through a few months ago. There's so much in that bill I didn't agree with, but I voted for it because it did include money for state and local governments. I wanted to get that debate going, get something on the bargaining table. I hope that it's not just attitude, they're going to be locked in until Election Day, because this can be devastating. I don't know how, for instance, suburban counties are going to survive if they don't get compensation from the federal government.
You know, it's hard to imagine for me that come January, you're not going to be in D.C. fighting for Long Island anymore. I know there's a very spirited campaign for your seat, but do you have any second thoughts about not being back in Washington come January?
Yeah, listen, I loved everyone in the 28 years. It seems like 28 minutes. It goes so fast. The 28 years I've been down here. But there comes a time in your life. I mean, I'm still in good health. My wife, Rosemary, is still in good health. And I wanted to have some more time to be able to spend with my children and grandchildren. And that's basically it. But, I have no doubt on January 2nd or January 3rd, where there's a story I'm listening to on Lynn Berman or whatever, and I said, geez, I could do something about that, and then realized that I can't. I still intend to be a voice. I still intend to speak out. I'm not going to retire altogether. I'm going to still, you know, be active in the community. I'm still going to try and be a presence. But, no, I am definitely going to miss – I remember back on 9/11, as tragic as that was, the gratifying feeling I got knowing that I was actually being able to help, you know, those families who were who suffered the death of loved ones, those who were wounded, those who really had their lives wrecked. I was able to, you know, step in and work on that. And other instances since, yeah, I'm going to miss that. And certainly, you know, fights like this where New York gets taken advantage. Part of the problem with being from New York, with all the greatness we have, is that when it comes to politics, Democrats take us for granted, so they don't do what they should do, and Republicans figure they're never going to win New York anyway, so why bother? So
also, hey, Congressman, we got to run, but we always appreciate having you on, and we know why now you win the bipartisan award every year. So keep at it, Congressman, as long as you're there.
Great, Lynn. Good enough. Thank you. Right. Bye now.
Bye, Pete. All right, coming up next, we're going to be joined by Charlie Gasparino from the Fox Business Channel. He's got a fascinating story on how A-Rod still has a plan to buy the Mets. We'll hear from him next. One of the guys who's been all over this Mets sales story from the beginning is Charlie Gasparino of the Fox Business Network. And he broke a story yesterday I thought was just fascinating, where he said that A-Rod and J-Lo, who lost out on the bidding to Steve Cohen. Well, A-Rod, apparently they've put out the word that should Steve Cohen not pass muster if he's rejected by the owners because he's had past problems with his hedge fund, well, A-Rod's ready to step in. And not only that, he'll give the exact same offer that Steve Cohen gave. No negotiations, no questions asked. And with that, we welcome in Charlie Gasparino of the Fox Business Network. That's quite a story that's kind of flown under the radar, Charlie.
Yeah, I give it low odds. I give them credit. I mean, you know, A-Rod and J-Lo, they didn't get to where they were by taking no for an answer, obviously, right? But this thing, I think, is just about baked. Steve Cohen is, you know, say what you want about his insider trading background. He was never convicted of it, never charged of it. It was his firm. He got charged with a civil charge, which is much lower on the totem pole of failing to supervise someone at his firm. You know, he's not the only person ever have a brush on Wall Street with insider trading. I believe early in his career, Warren Buffett even had one. So remember, this is not like the greatest sin of all time. But he just threw the baseball a lifeline. He paid up for a money losing team. He's got the bank to keep it going. He could buy the sports network, which I understand he may try to do when this thing is all wrapped up. And on top of that, he just got the endorsement of Rob Manfred. If you just Google it, I mean, it doesn't get this far without him, this thing being like 90% baked in. I think with A-Rod and J-Lo, and you know, by the way, they're joined by some very serious people. Mark Lurie from Walmart.com, an e-commerce expert. The Crafts are apparently involved. They're not going to take an ownership portion of the team, but they're going to help with concessions and things like that. They put together kind of an interesting management group. Vincent Viola of the formerly the New York Merck. He created Virtu, which is a big high-speed trading firm, and he owns the Florida Panthers as part of the group. Mike Rapoli, right? Vitamin Water, part of the group. So it's interesting. But, you know, when you put all their money together, to be honest with you, they don't have the staying power of someone like Steve Cohen in running the Mets. I mean, he's got $15 billion cash. He paid $2.4, whatever it is, cash. He made $1 billion last year. Now, ask me, you guys know sports better than me. How much is a yearly yearly player payroll? $250 million?
Yeah, well, that's the high end. The Mets are under that, yeah.
Right, so Steve Cohen last year made $1 billion.
Wow.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Just let that settle in. Now, maybe owners get jealous that he can buy teams. I mean, buy players. I don't know.
But no,
if you're worrying about the longevity of this franchise, which is, listen, I'm an old Met fan. Believe it or not, I was born in the Bronx, but my father loved the Mets. For some reason, he used to go to the Polo Grounds and watch, you know, the washed up former Yankees play there, and he fell in love with the team. If you know this franchise, it needs financial stability. The most financially stable of all these folks, you know, I'm just looking at balance sheet. I'm a business reporter. Is Steve?
You know, I think you're right. I think it's sort of a done deal. I got a question about TikTok because I see you got a scoop on it. You know, my kids live.
I just posted it on Twitter.
I see. Yeah, my kids live on it. Of course, they're worried about it going away. The White House worried about privacy concerns because the Chinese own it. Sort it out for me. What's going on here?
Well, listen, I never knew about TikTok because except occasionally my 12-year-old niece used to show me dance routines. You know, her and her friends. It became a big thing because Trump somehow got it in his head that the Chinese, which own the parent company of TikTok is called ByteDance. They're a Beijing-based company, that they were somehow using the user data from a bunch of 12-year-olds.
Hey, Charlie, we got about 30 seconds left, so we need you to cut to the chase.
There's a huge, you asked me to unpack it, that's why I went through it. But just so you know, there's a huge battle right now in the White House, whether the current deal on the table for Oracle to do a partnership, a JV, is enough protection of that user data. And it's a jump ball right now from what I hear.
Charlie, you're a great guest because we ask you one question, you eat up the whole segment. So,
sorry about that.
We have an open invitation to come back and help us chew the scenery here.
Anytime.
Thank you. Charlie Gasparino, the Fox Business Network, obviously plugged in all over the place, sports and elsewhere. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Gridlock Sam. He joins us. He is Sam Schwartz. You've read him in the Daily News. When will New York City traffic return to normal? We'll ask Gridlock Sam after the news. It's 9 o'clock.